Timbers Army joins Abe and Joe to talk about the intersection of soccer culture and the struggle against fascism after these messages.
Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 8th Annual Portland Latin American Film Festival, taking place at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The Other Border will screen on September 22nd at 4:45 p.m. The Other Border is the story of high school student Erardo Hernandez, raised in the United States since 6 months of age, who was one of over 100 undocumented workers arrested by ICE in Ohio on June 25, 2018. In attendance will be special guests, including the director and many social justice organizers working on immigration rights and issues. Again, that's The Other Border on Sunday, September 22nd at 4:45 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Boys Who Said No, a documentary film screening on Saturday, September 14th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House in Portland. During the Vietnam War, draft resistors openly refused military service to draw others to oppose the war. The Boys Who Said No is a documentary film featuring interviews with resistors and historians. Individuals featured include folk singer and activist Joan Baez, resistance leader David Harris, Cleveland Sellers of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, and Muhammad Ali. Again, that's The Boys Who Said No, screening Saturday, September 14th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning.
That sound you heard?
Vaguely.
I heard a vague sound. That was a mighty sound. Mighty roar.
Shows you what I know.
That sound you heard was the Timbers Army. I'm sure if you've lived in this town for any number of times.
Timbers Army. I even snuck into a game in the days when you could sneak into a game.
He snuck into a game?
Yeah.
Way back in the day?
Right, yeah.
When they were just a minor league team?
No. A couple, three years ago. I don't know. There was a guy at the gate, and he let me in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been attending Timbers games for many years, too, since before they joined Major League Soccer, which is the top flight soccer league here in the United States.
Yeah. No, I of all the sports, I find soccer, that's real football, much better, much healthier, and much more exciting than regular football, American football, which I consider to be tank against tank.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. So you might be wondering, why am I tuning into my favorite political talk show? Because this is everyone's favorite political talk show. And why am I hearing about soccer? Well, that reason for that is... soccer recently in Portland has seen the extension of the larger struggle against fascism spill over into the stadium at Providence Park.
Yeah.
But really, this is nothing new, particularly when we're talking about this sport, soccer.
Right.
Politics and football, as it's called everywhere else but here, intersect in a way that typically doesn't happen in American sports.
That's true, and sometimes it's a very reactionary force. The hatred between Leeds and whatever other city, I can't remember.
Okay.
That just shows you how close I am to it, is really quite strong. I once was given a jacket for a specific team, and I was attacked for having it in a bar here, as if somehow this was a significant thing. So people, Leeds, it was the Leeds guy that wanted to choose me out. Yeah, it's weird. But I got to tell people, first of all, this is KBOO 90.7 on your dial, FM. And this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor.
Yeah.
I'm Joe Uris. And we really are going to talk about the intersection between real-world politics and the fantasy world of sport. 231-8182.
8187.
8187. No, you ain't got that. I wrote it wrong.
503-231-8187.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's getting flaky, man.
So a little more on why we're talking about this. As I mentioned, globally in soccer culture, politics is very much part of the mix. One of the reasons this is so is because in much of the world, soccer is the only game. Here in the United States, in a major city, you might have a baseball team, a football team, basketball, hockey, so on and so forth. People may follow a number of these sports.
All sucking off the public trough.
Yeah, well, be that as it may. That's not always true, but yes, you're right. That is a problem here in the United States. Football is a little different. For example, you go to a large city in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
There may be any number of teams, all the way from the top flight level down through the minor leagues, and this allows fans to affiliate with them, based on a number of factors. Maybe it's a team from your neighborhood, from your part of town. Maybe it's a team that reflects your community's working class values, and that's where politics and sport mix in the context of football that they really don't here in the United States with our homegrown sports. That's been changing in recent years. Anybody who's followed the ridiculous nonsense coming out of the National Football League of American Football regarding Colin Kaepernick and race. So you know that this sort of thing is bleeding over into sports here in the United States where we have traditionally not seen it. And that's by design. Most stadiums for the homegrown American sports regulate the kinds of signs that their fans are allowed to display in stadiums pretty heavily. So that's why you don't see a lot of overt political displays in American sports. But as I've been saying, not so in soccer. So what does this have to do with Portland? Well, one of the symbols that has been flown by the Timbers Army and supporters of the Timbers for many, many years is something called the Iron Front. You've probably seen this. It's three parallel arrows pointing down diagonally, and this represents the struggle against the traditional forms of oppression, primarily in the 20th century, fascism, communism, and one more that's escaping me right now. But in any event, it's broadly been used as a symbol of a struggle of a people against incipient fascism.
Yeah, the arrows point down, but also to the left.
Diagonally to the left. So this symbol, the Iron Front, was named for an anti-fascist resistance group in the early years of Nazi Germany, which was officially shut down by Hitler's government in 1933. So earlier, before this season began, Major League Soccer, the top flight soccer league in the United States, put out a policy banning explicitly political signage flown by fans in stadiums. And they included among these explicitly political expressions the Iron Front symbol, which, as I mentioned, has been flown by supporters of the Timbers for years, and not just by the Timbers, by football supporters the world over, who have as part of their ethos a resistance to fascism. So naturally, that did not go over very well with the Timbers supporters. So in response to this ban, last month in the match against Seattle, our arch rival here in Portland, the entire stadium went silent for the first 33 minutes of the game. It was an eerie thing. Full disclosure, I am a season ticket holder for the Timbers. So I put that on the table.
Well, it's good of you to acknowledge
that. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. So for 33 minutes, the entire stadium went silent. Now, if you're familiar at all with the Timbers and their supporters, and the Thorns and their supporters.
I like the Thorns.
I do too. You know that typically the stadium is not silent. It's anything but silent. It's raucous. People are standing and singing the whole game long. They're waving flags and banners the whole game long.
They're cutting wood.
They're cutting wood. They're scoring goals. It's a raucous scene. So for 33 minutes in the Seattle match, it was silent. The 33rd minute came along, and in honor of the year 1933, when the Iron Front was banned by Hitler, the stadium then erupted in cheers, and fans flew the Iron Front symbol once again in defiance of the league's edict. Then, in the following week, in another home match against Salt Lake, fans flew the Iron Front again, and this time, there was a response from the Timbers front office and from the league, and a number of fans were handed a ban from the stadium for several games for flying this flag. So what does this mean? What is this intersection of sports and politics here in Portland? Is publicly symbolizing your resistance to fascism, is that in itself a political act?
Yeah.
Should the Iron Front be amongst those symbols that are banned by either the league or by the Timbers front office? And if so, what does that say about the club and about the league? If you're not explicitly anti-fascist, then what are you? That's the kind of question we want to dig into today. And we are joined by a representative of the Timbers Army and of the 107 Supporters Trust, as they are officially known, Stefan Lewis. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Actually the 107 Independent Supporters Trust.
Oh, excuse me. 107 Independent Supporters Trust.
Yeah, that's Independent Supporters Trust are actually organizational arms of supporters culture around the world.
Oh, okay. So the 107, named for the section at the end of the stadium there. So you have joined the worldwide ranks of Independent Supporters Trust.
Yeah.
So was that more or less accurate, the synopsis I gave?
Yeah, you did, I think, a really good job. Just to clarify, the third arrow is monarchy.
Third arrow is monarchy. Thank you very much.
Wait. What are each of the three arrows?
It's against communism. They saw what was happening in the streets to their neighbors, to their community members, and they didn't like it. You know, they saw people being both verbally and physically assaulted and disappearing, and the Iron Front went into rally other groups and take advantage of the system that they had, which is a constitutional representative democracy, to be able to combat the rise in fascism. That's the first arrow. There's also a pull towards communism at that point, and some people want to return to monarchy. And so the Iron Front as a symbol, one of the reasons it was used, it could also be graffiti to go over something like the swastika. So it goes down and to the left because most people are right-handed, but it's also perfectly fine to have it go down and to the right if you're left-handed. So either one, it's interchangeable.
So it's designed to be able to, you could slap it over a swastika and easily hide
yep.
it. That's pretty great.
Yep.
That's something that
we see today with hate stuff. Experts, you know, if there's like hate graffiti or signage or something like that, there's a tendency to like tear it down, paint over it. And what is much more effective for a community moving forward is to actually cover it with something positive. You know, so if you mm-hmm. see like, you know, hate messages or something like that, it's important to, as a community, come in and put something positive on top of it. You know, it could even be like something like an amazing mural that shows the love and connectedness and acceptance of all people. And that's much more powerful.
So why, tell us a little about why the Timbers Army has embraced anti-fascism and the Iron Front symbol in particular. What is it about the supporters culture that resonates with that?
Well, for us, the most important thing is creating an environment that is radically inclusive. We want everybody to feel safe, and creating that safe space is paramount to who we are. You know, it always has been. It our ethos actually came out of the struggle here in Portland in the 80s and 90s, as you know, hate groups were coming in and taking advantage of the fact that we were primarily white, and you know, they saw it as a good testing ground, a proving ground for some of their ideologies to take root. And you know, we as a community, first it started in like, you know, the punk rock alternative music scene, looking for disaffected youth to send their message of hate, and it's like, hey, you know, you're a good person, you know, you're awesome because you're better than this person, versus, you know, the message that we combated it with, which was, you're awesome because you're you, and you have the right to be the best you that there is, no matter what your background is. That's, you know, cornerstone. And, you know, a lot of that was kind of flying under the radar of the overall community until the death in 1998 of Mullah Getta Seurat, where racist skinheads beat him to death with baseball bats. And that sent a chill through this entire community, and you know, it took years for us to really rally around a path forward. And what that ended up looking like in the 90s was, you know, the city government, our local government, community-facing organizations, and the business community all came together to say, no, this is not okay. And, you know, we thought we pushed it away, but apparently we just pushed it into the shadows. So this is something, you know, that, you know, we need to continue to do today. But also, you know, this is something we built off. You know, this, and we're not alone in this struggle. We're not alone in this history. This is happening all over the country, all over the world at this point. You know, in other parts of the world, this was happening in the terraces of football stadiums. We didn't have those at that point, but when we did in 2001, it fed over. You know, there were other groups and supporters culture that, you know, there were already connections made to some of that. So when we started up the Timbers Army, it was a natural progression to make that radical inclusive environment.
So you see the Timbers Army's embrace of anti-fascism as an extension of a sort of a larger civic ethic that's shared widely in Portland. You know,
definitely
a natural expression of our homegrown, you know, culture, not just as a city, but as football supporters. Now,
yep.
The league, part of the reason the league has forbidden the Iron Front, the display of the Iron Front in particular, is because they say that it has been co-opted by and is now associated with in the public mind with Antifa, whom the league and others have branded as a violent political organization. And it seems to me that the Timbers Army is saying, no, this is a symbol whose meaning is much wider than association with Antifa and represents our general opposition to fascism. Is that accurate?
It's fair. I think a little bit more information. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think a lot of your listeners know that Antifa is anti-fascism.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And, you know, my grandma mm-hmm. is anti-fascist. The mm-hmm. Jewish woman across the street of my house is anti-fascist. You know, the word Antifa, how it's currently being used, is actually just being defined recently in the last few years as people using the black bloc tactic in the streets in defense of our community against hate groups use this specific tactic, and people are scrambling for a narrative, and they, Antifa, you know, let's go after, you know, that's the boogeyman. And the fact is, you know, Antifa has been around for decades.
Yeah, I think
it's an anti-fascist movement that's been around for a long time, and to associate it purely with violence is just, it's wrong. You know, there's a lot of different tactics that are in there. Our personal tactics, we focus a lot more on bystander intervention and de-escalation.
No, I think it's...
You know, to keep people safe.
I think it's really important to understand that there is, among many people, a recognition of the rising force of fascism, the Trumpian forces, for example. I mean, there's no question about his behavior and his predilection for authoritarian rule and, I think, fascism. But beyond that, there is a question of tactics. The question of tactics really embraces, do we mask up? Do we wear black clothing? Do we actually physically fight? Or do we resort to a different kind of tactics, like the tradition of Martin Luther King, which is nonviolent?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a good argument. But
Pop Mob's a good argument, too, you know?
Yeah.
Pop Mob is out there using, you know, really great tactics of
yeah.
just pure joy and hilariousness to drown out their ability to recruit.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. I love the marching band at the last event. And in fact, I think it's necessary to create excitement. It's necessary to mm-hmm. create the notion that the fascists are, in fact, absurd, which is what it does.
Mm-hmm.
I had for a long time been kind of concerned about the masking up and so on, but I've decided it's symbolic behavior. It doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. imply violence, and that those who are violent are a minority within that community. So I'm personally now very excited by the struggle going on. Not that I'm happy about it. I don't want to suggest that,
mm-hmm.
but I like to see the resistance. It makes me feel better about the future.
Yep. Go ahead, Stefan.
Go ahead. That's fine.
Oh, okay. So It appears clear that the fans in Providence Park are not going to stop displaying the Iron Front, despite the fact that the league has now handed down bans. Actually, did those match bans come from the league or from the Timbers front office?
The rule came from the league.
Right.
The notification came from the front office.
Okay, so the club is enforcing the league's policy here.
It's a bind because of the commercial aspect of it.
Right, and I understand some of the clubs and the league's reasoning is that if they're worried about the association people make between the Iron Front and Antifa, and they're worried about losing sponsorship dollars if they permit fans to display this anti-fascist symbol, which in my mind I think leads everybody to a gut check, right? If you're offended by the Iron Front, then I think it's time you had a long conversation with yourself about maybe your coziness with fascism. If that symbol causes you offense, it's time for some self-reflection. And to me, it seems like a reach that any business who bothers to sponsor a team like the Portland Timbers probably realizes that it's a good deal for them, and they're going to be pretty hesitant to withdraw that sponsorship. And it seems to me unlikely that any association with Antifa is going to lead to that.
I think it's important, though, to recognize that our culture is ignorant in terms of long-term profound politics. And it's difficult for people to grasp the struggle that's going on as a more profound, more significant struggle, fascism against liberal political thought. And I think that this is an archetypal situation. And I really believe that it's dangerous for a league to make a rule like this. On the other hand, what happens if the fascists become dominant in some manner in some other city or even here and start displaying some kind of Nazi stuff? So it is a problem. It's a real problem. But at this point in this city, this seems to be a very positive phenomenon.
So one of the a few of the aspects of what you were just talking about, I definitely want to address. First of all, the idea that it's hard for people to understand what's going on here and how fascism fits in, I don't think it's hard to understand. That's one of the things in one of the front office's statements is they said that they didn't think that they were capable of actually communicated. They understood the meaning, but they didn't feel that they were capable of communicating that. And that's something that we found is not true. You know, we're in the middle of a huge educational campaign. I talked to, a bunch of people in my community, a lot of whom don't even have anything to do with soccer at all. And in 2 minutes, I can get somebody to understand it. In 5 minutes, I can get somebody to really be, empowered to do something about it. It's not that difficult. Another point is, this isn't about just this one symbol. This is about a much bigger thing. In Atlanta, we saw people actually get kicked out and banned for having a end gun violence.
Really?
Banner. And in Salt Lake, there was a banner that was confiscated that had the supporters group name and the civil rights closed fist, and that was confiscated. The whole idea that the word political, the big thing that we have about the code of conduct, including the word political, is its inherent arbitrary nature. You'll never see us do, political candidates. You'll never see us do, or we have yet to ever do any measures for or against. That's just not our style. But when it comes to human rights specifically, we believe that it shouldn't be in up for debate. Civil rights itself, we believe are inherent, human.
Well, it certainly makes sense what you're
and
saying.
To call them political means that they're up for debate. And while the reality is that they are in a lot of different phases, that's something that, we push strongly that they shouldn't be. And, the code of conduct itself is actually something that the we as supporters groups, the Independent Supporters Council, which is a collection of supporters groups throughout the U.S. and Canada that spans leagues, not just MLS. We were working and hoping to get this code of conduct so that there are rules, throughout, because otherwise at each front office, each stadium has different rules, and they're all over the place, and people are getting bans for all kinds of stuff. And then when they created this rule, they copy and pasted some of the language out of the FIFA human rights policy. You know, so it's like, you know, nothing that's racist, sexist, xenophobic, you know, homophobic, none of that stuff, right? And we're like, great, 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 that's awesome. But, you know, the work that we do is supportive of those things. And to call that political is a total misnomer. And that's, and what we want is not five rich white guys hanging out in a room making the decision that they're unqualified to make, but actually have experts, have the supporters groups there, have, like, you know, this is not, you know, reinventing the wheel. It's been done in Europe. They're doing great things in Europe to try to, like, combat hate in the terraces and keep hate groups out. And, you know, yes, that's a huge struggle, but and more of a struggle than it is here. And that's one of the reasons why we've been able to rally together under a united front throughout, you know, spanning all different teams. You know, we're not doing this alone. We may be leading the way just because we are the strongest organization. We're really big. We have a lot of people. We do a lot of stuff. We have a lot of partners in the community. You know, it's not just us. We work with a lot of different nonprofits, from Portland United Against Hate. That's 67 different community-facing organizations, you know, that we lean on. That's where we get our language. That's where we get, you know, we're a reflection. You know, as you said at the beginning, supporters culture is a reflection of the community. And it's really important for us to have that connection to the community to move forward. Well, as we create that, that safe space of radical inclusion.
You made a point there that was really important, I think, and really gets right to the heart of this discussion. Fascism, by its nature, it erodes human rights. It singles out and violently persecutes members of marginalized and underrepresented communities. And therefore, the struggle against fascism is not a political movement, although it can be expressed that way. It is fundamentally a movement in support of human rights and civil rights. And in that context...
Yeah.
The Iron Front is not a political symbol, but a pro-human symbol, a pro-human rights, pro-civil rights symbol. You know, and I'm absolutely with you guys. It's silly that the league would take this step, even sillier that the club would choose to enforce this. And really, it runs counter to, I think, has been one of the smartest moves that the league has made since it was born, which is to not regulate fan expression very much so as to allow the natural evolution of supporters cultures like those that you find in South America and in Europe. That was a really good move on the league's part. And this would seem to run counter to all of that. So I hope that they can come around on this.
Yo, for sure. You know, you use some of these examples in South America. A lot of the supporters groups are run by criminal organizations. You know, like you mentioned Europe as an example, and yeah, you've got like hate groups at the core of some of them, but you also have some that are really, really share our ethos and create that safe environment. And those are clubs that are coming out of, you know, could be like a part of a town or a town that has a lot of diversity, understands the value, understands, you know, like the value of having all members of the community be recognized for who they are. You know, whether you're gay, you're straight, you're Latina, you're, you know, a Jew, it doesn't matter. You know, if you want to come and, like, you know, vent your frustration from the week or, like, your joy and share it and give it to your city via, you know, being in the terraces with us, you know, more power. We want you. We love you. You know, let's do this. You know, like, we, you know, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think it is.
And to have this whole debate, you know, the fact that this is a debate at all is, you know, is, I really don't believe that the league intended to do this or the front office intended to do this, but by choosing this as the battle, you know, in a both sides thing, because really, I feel that they were trying to deal with some of the hate groups that are trying to come in, specifically in like New York City FC, where we've seen hate groups actually trying to make a play into the terraces. And this is, they felt like their hands were tied in some ways. And, you know, this is a lot of speculation, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt because I know enough of them to know that they're not bad people. And they wanted to both sides it, you know, which is just playing into the narrative of white nationalism, white supremacy, that there is a both sides to this when there isn't. You know, this isn't us versus them. This is just us.
Yeah, no, I
and,
think...
And to throw out the dog whistle is, you know, downplays that. I don't think they did it on purpose.
I think...
But we have to say no. We have to say no as a community every single time.
I don't think... I don't know whether they did it on purpose or not. I see the owner class of the soccer teams as the same as any other capitalist invention and investment. And I see that there is a more profound and more significant struggle going on than is acknowledged by most people in this country. And I really, truly believe that internationally, fascist ideation, fascist activity, fascist control is on the march, is growing everywhere. And that this particular thing, that is this symbol, this three-arrow symbol, is a response, a legitimate response to that. I understand that it's political, but I also understand that it's more profoundly significant in terms of human rights everywhere. And I'm very concerned that this would not be shut down.
Yeah, you know, we have to say no at every single
point. Right.
You know, you can't let somebody create fear in you of someone else and turn that into hate. And, you know, that does nothing but empower the people who want to take control at that point. And that's not what it's about. You know, that's not what civilization is about.
All right, you're listening to the Abe and Joe Talk radio program on 90.7 KBOO, your community-supported radio station. We are talking about the struggle against fascism and how it manifests itself in the form of soccer fandom here in the Rose City. We are being joined on the phone by Stefan Lewis of the Timbers Army, and we're talking about the recent action taken by both the league and the front office of the Timbers to ban the display of the Iron Front symbol by fans during matches. If you want to take part in this conversation, we'd very much like to hear your questions and opinions. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also write to us on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Or you can tweet at us at HonestAbe72. Stefan, one thing that's been really inspiring to me as I've been following this story over the past weeks and months is how so many other supporters groups at other clubs have taken up this mantle. You know, the traveling fans from Seattle, our arch rival, during that that protest in August, joined in the 33 minutes of silence in the stadium. And their supporters group back at their home ground has taken up the cause, along with Vancouver and a number of other of cities around the league. So it's not just here in Portland that anti-fascism is an expression of the civic ethos. And I think it's pretty damn cool to see this happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. You know, that's one of the things, you know, I mentioned the ISC, the Independent Supporters Council, you know, and it's a great way for us to have a dialogue and share these things because there's that network that's there. I mean, this stuff was happening before we formed the ISC, but it really helps to solidify that. And it's a beautiful thing to see it coming across, you know, the country.
I really think it is.
Yeah, and outside leagues too. You know, there's you know, USL teams are doing it as well.
I really hate to make common cause with the Sounders in any respect, but I was grateful to have their support.
Oh, you and me both. You talked about it being eerie, man. Let me tell you, we share that sentiment full on. You know, like the week leading up to that match, you know, normally that's Hate Seattle week.
Really? You know like, be true to your school.
Yeah, bust out all these videos, talk trash all week long. You know, and instead I'm sitting there like, you know, like, taking forever hovering my finger over a like button of a Sounder fan, and I'm like,
you got to do it.
Do I wash my hands now?
Okay, like, well, I think it harkens back way back to my youth when there was a popular song, Be True to Your School, Just Like You Would to Your Girl. It's at that kind of popular cultural level. However, we got people calling us, and I want to give them a chance. 231-8187. Lou, you're on the air.
Good morning. Good program. Good topic.
Thanks.
It's sort of like from Colin Kaepernick to Megan Rapinoe to Iron Front and the Timbers Army.
Right.
So good job. There is a thing. I had a comment and maybe a couple of thoughts. And one is there is a meeting at Portland State tomorrow, and we'll talk about anti-fascist. And we started using the Iron Front symbol, which I assume people can use, that you want people to be...
It's not copyrighted.
Anti-fascist. One thought I had, your program also was fairly informative in that it sounds like it was against monarchy historically, against fascism, and then the communist part, I mean, it's a symbol, so I would say anti-racist or anti-capitalist, but, you know, quibbling. One of my questions is Merritt Paulson been contacted specifically, and is Merritt Paulson, obviously Hank Paulson's son, who was, in one of the Bush's Treasury Department cabinet posts,
yep.
Is Merritt Paulson involved, or have people talked to him specifically so far?
That's a good question.
There was actually a run-in between Paulson and a fan following the Seattle game, in which Paulson was not pleased about the protest, nor about the display of the Iron Front. Stefan, do you know anything more about that?
Yeah, he's been involved in some of the deliberations. There are most of our meetings with the front office. He's not there. We have other staff that we've been dealing with. He has been to one of our meetings specifically and has been open to the dialogue on the subject throughout the process.
So not completely hopeless then.
No, definitely not.
We did invite one of the people that got banned. We invited him to come to the meeting. The Cider Riot owner, he's pretty close to Abram, I believe, pretty close to Cabo's office.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see if Abram's come. There's also it's a candidate forum. So it's for 2020 in Oregon local elections. It's at 6 p.m. at Chit Chat Cafe at Portland State tomorrow, Wednesday. And it's a chance for people, if they want to come, to ask questions about what are local people doing. We have like 5 or 6 candidates for different offices coming. Any other thoughts about... California, there's a community college. We did an alternate activist paper on the left. And the last page of one of the issues was blank, left blank, and it said COD, the name of the school, College of the Desert, sports, who cares? And then it was blank. But to me, I'm interested in sports whenever there's Megan Rapinoe or Colin Kaepernick or Timbers Army. And I did have a question, and it doesn't matter exactly, but in terms of language, it seems to me that... civil rights and human rights are very much political, but that there's some pressure maybe from Trump or whatever to say things should not be political. Dr. King was obviously political, but he never ran for office. So that's my last thought. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Hey, thanks for the call.
Okay, I think we'll go to another caller, 231-8187. Edie, you're on the air.
Or Eddie.
Eddie, can't tell.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right.
Eddie, good morning.
That clarifies it. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm a pretty hardcore 107 supporter. Go to all the Riveters games and Riveters and Timbers Army section I can manage. I just want to point out kind of the obvious that the American flag is a political symbol. And why do we play the national anthem, fly the flag, and have this sort of compulsory standing for it? I mean, to me, that's very specific political, like, you know.
Sure.
Hang out there at all of our games, and why is what's up with this like compulsory nationalism?
That's a really good question, and that's you know, we talk, people like to talk about American sports not being political venues, but you have this in everything, especially American football, where you have this sort of celebration of militant nationalism preceding each game, you know, with jet fighters flying over and all this business.
Well, and the halftime ceremonies.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can't take a knee.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I've even had other supporters, army people, you know, ask me to stand up during the national anthem. I'm like, are you crazy? What? Like, what's this about?
Stefan, you have any comment on that?
Yeah, you know, that's he's not alone with our membership. That's a concern, and for a long time, there have been people who have been, you know, sitting out the national anthem. Or doing something else, but that doesn't. You know, one of the things that's important to us is allowing people to express themselves however way they see fit, and you know it's important to leave people to that. You know, like if somebody's giving you a hard time for either whatever you're doing, we need to curb that.
Yeah.
And something's organically take its own thing, but. You know, for me personally, you know, I love this country,
you know, like, I'm not going to flout at all. Normally, you know, we sing, we belt out the national anthem historically, you know, for, you know, the good things, for, you know, for the potential, you know, like, we're, this is all just a grand experiment where we're working to form the more perfect union, you know, and, you know, this is my opinion alone, you know, or for myself, and not speaking as the organization as a whole, because there are a breadth of opinions about that. And there are people who have less hope, but, you know, we can't abandon this experiment that we're going through. And we have the power within it to be able to affect that positive change. And it's constantly a struggle. It's always been a struggle throughout the history of this country.
Well, Custer flew that flag when he slaughtered the Dakota Sioux. And many other horrific
things under
that flag. But my point is that I think it's hypocritical for the MLS to say you can't have political symbols and then have the American flag like at every game and everyone's standing for it. That's all I got.
Yep, okay. Agreed. Thank you very much for the call.
He's definitely not alone in that opinion. And he's definitely not wrong in that opinion. You know, and that's one of the beautiful things about this whole discussion is, you know, like, you know, what do we have in common? What do we have, you know, if that's the way he feels he's being his best self, he's perfectly empowered to do that.
I agree. You know, and any movement that leads us to question the borders of politics and nationalism, I think ultimately is a productive one. So, you know, and yet another reason why I'm glad this is happening right now. Let's go back to the phones. Chris, you're next. Good morning.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Hey, Stephan, nice job with everything with the Timbers Army. I thought the 33 minutes of silence was eerie and weird and powerful. I thought it was, and then when we busted out the Bella Chow at the 33rd minute, that was wow. It was really cool.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering what the long term I don't want you to tip your hand too much if you have, you know, some grand secret strategy, but I guess I expected there to be, you know, escalation after that, and then after people got the bans, you know, what's next? I know there's a lot of talk, a lot of people are not buying concessions right now in the stadium. There's talk of walkouts and I'm just wondering if what you can share about the strategy to push the front office and the league to back down on this.
Well, one of the things that we've been pushing for the whole time is getting experts at the table, right? People who know what they're doing when it comes to this stuff. And you know, there are a lot of people that shared your opinion when they read our statement after the bans came out. And that, you know, they wanted to escalate more, they wanted to do more. But if you read really closely, what's in there is we got the front office to agree to sit down and meet with regional experts, people who are experts in crafting policy and strategy. And we want to be able to empower our front office to be able to be a real ally. You know, you see them using the language continually that they share our ethos. You see them using the language that, you know, we are anti-fascist, we are anti-racist, we are anti-homophobic, you know, and we need to be able to break down the barriers for them to be able to participate in those discussions. I mentioned earlier the statement that they didn't believe that they had the power to educate people on the new meaning, and this hopefully is a way for them to empower them to do that.
You know,
that for us is a big step forward.
I think it's important to recognize, however, the reality of what professional soccer is. Merritt Paulson, the son of an extremely powerful member of the capitalist class, I will label him thus, is not inherently in his economic life, at least, a liberal. And the fact of the matter is that the team depends upon its making money. The irony of that is that if the fan base rejects that opportunity to attend these games, to pay money for it, it will fail. So they're caught in a bind. They're caught in a very interesting bind. And I think following this is both entertaining and, ironically, even though it's just sport, very important.
Yeah. So you can, so
there was a one of the earlier callers mentioned Merritt's dad, Hank Paulson, right? And there's very little evidence that he has anything to do with the Timbers at all. It's really, you know, kind of Merritt and his team running the show. You know, if that's happening behind closed doors, I haven't honestly seen a whole lot to it. And, you know, in Merritt's defense, he does consider himself to be an ethical business owner. And that's the thing is, you know, as we're in this overall struggle, it's an important thing for businesses to be able to have, you know, an ethical background, to have an ethos against hate, against, you know, the things that we support. And you're seeing that more and more as the price of doing business. And that's like, you know, the culture shift of, you know, consumers are at any different point, you know, demanding that. And there's potential there to be able to take that struggle into the dollar signs and into the, you know, the capitalist realm. You know, that's right now.
I don't know. I think
we have, and let's push that.
Chris,
I think some of the workers in the stadium might not agree that Merritt's an ethical business owner. There's been struggles over pay in the mm-hmm. stadium for years. But
we've had their back. We've had their back with the employees in that.
Sorry?
We've supported the employees in that.
Oh yeah, totally. Trouble. And I know
they all know we have their back.
And the Players Association as well. But I think, I mean, I agree. I think Merritt is a boss and an owner, and he's really there to make money. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know. I think putting something like a boycott on the table would be a good bargaining chip. Hopefully, they do the right thing, and I think it's great that they're mm-hmm. meeting with the human rights experts. You know, hopefully that goes somewhere. But I'm honestly a little skeptical.
Hey, thank you for the call, Chris. Yeah. Appreciate it. I hope that Merritt Paulson does end up on the right side of this, because he's got something really special on his hands with the whole mojo and mm-hmm. the whole culture that is articulated by the Timbers Army and by the rest of the Timbers support. So I hope he is smart enough to realize that if he answers with a heavy hand here, that he risks jeopardizing that. Here's hoping. George, right. You're next. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just have a question. I was wondering if when in, say, some of the Latin American countries, there has been very strong Marxian movements. Perhaps they fit under the definition of communism. I don't know, but I heard your guest express definite opposition to communism. But there have been, in some of these countries, fascist dictatorships that set out on a murderous course, as in Chile or Peru or Argentina, to wipe out the communists. And I'm wondering, even if there was a massive popular support for the communist teams in some country, whether maybe Cuba too, would your guest then say, well, we're still opposed to communism, whether it calls itself Marxism, Leninism, or Workers' Party Marxism or not?
Let me jump in here real fast. I want to clarify something. We talked at the top of the show about the symbolism of the three diagonal arrows in the Iron Front. One of those represented opposition to communism. At the time and in the context of those times, that was the totalitarian brand of communism that was in full flame in the newly created Soviet Union at the time.
Could I ask you a question about that?
Just a second, though. Let me finish. So. Sure. That opposition to communism is to a brand of communism that many people on the left don't appreciate, don't recognize today. But at the time, it was perceived as a deep threat to civil liberties in Europe.
Now, I have a question, though. Hmm. Recently, an American historical researcher who was a medievalist, Grover Fur, has had a book published by Red Star Publishers, I think in 2014 or 15, and in it he expresses his experience in talking to a researcher in Russia who was involved with the Soviet Union, And Furr takes the view that there was, in the United States, a very different view of the Soviet Union than the Soviet Union itself was practicing. And I don't know, this is a new book, 2014.
Well, yeah, George, we're getting pretty far afield here. Maybe we can return to your earlier question to our guest?
Sure. Let's leave it with, you know, where it was, where you want to put it. Yeah.
So as far as South America is concerned, I have to admit I don't feel qualified to go into a lot of the specifics about that. As I said earlier, a lot of our talking points come through our relationships with experts and things that we've been able to ponder and discuss, both in committee and as a board, and just as a community. And honestly, the struggle for communism in South America is not really a part of that. What is a part of that is the, as I mentioned before, the criminal organizations that are in, part of the supporters culture down there. That is something that's really a concern to us, and that's actually something that's a concern to some of the players that play for the Timbers who come from South America.
You know,
we've seen actually a lot of buy-in from them into who we are and what we do. Based partially on the huge difference between that.
You know, I'm going to interrupt for just a second. I don't want you to go away, and I really respect what you're saying, but I want to make a point here, make a clear point. What is happening worldwide right now is an advance of actual fascism. We are seeing it in Brazil, where they're burning the forest to get rid of indigenous people. We're seeing it in Argentina. We're seeing it in almost every country, mm-hmm. and it's being led.
Yep.
And tolerated and encouraged by the current American government. So this struggle, while in some ways a sports struggle, some ways just a small thing, is actually the tip of the spear of fighting against fascism. And that's really very, very important.
Yeah, I'll even add to that. You know, you look at the rise of fascism in places like Poland. And its effect on supporters' culture there, or the embrace of it by supporters' culture there. And it is, I can tell you, ugly. It is really ugly. And it's not, you know, just limited to them. I mean, there's countries all over the place. You know, we're seeing even like a rise in Germany, where luckily there's actually a really solid pushback from different clubs and different supporters' groups there, which is great to see. You know, not just from the supporters groups, but the entire clubs and communities that they support. It's not an isolated. This is something that's going on all over the place. And we've been able to, in this country, take a foothold into it. When MLS first started up and soccer first started back up in the mid-90s following the World Cup, there were plays by hate groups trying to get into the terraces, and people stood up. And said no, you know, absolutely not. And, you know, in there's even a flyer out of Chicago that was created in 1998 warning about this. It was bilingual, English and Spanish, and at the bottom of it, there's the Iron Front.
Interesting. Very important, actually.
But we have that critical mass here in the terraces, you know, that we've long had. You know, part of it is, you know, soccer has long been like a tertiary sport to a lot of both fans and players. You know, for a long time it was viewed as like the sport kids play, you know,
right.
And anybody who played it farther than with kid was, you know, called the I don't know if I can say it on your radio
probably not. I'm familiar,
but, you know,
yeah,
something that you know, like it, you know, so maybe that plays a part in it too, that, you know, we were ostracized for playing like this sport, for loving this sport. And, you know, maybe that gets us to a critical mass right out of the gate.
Maybe
but,
so.
You know, that demographic is changing. We've got kids playing, you know, running around with Timbers jerseys and Thorns jerseys all over the place, all over this city. And, you know, we're still hearing reports of racism in youth soccer.
My only actual objection to the game, to real football, is the headshot. I don't know how you solve that problem.
It's not a problem. It's glorious.
It's glorious? Getting your brains knocked out?
Yes!
I don't know.
John writes into the Facebook page to say the league erroneously claims that the Iron Front ban was co-opted by the violent factions of Antifa, yet they don't acknowledge how Patriot Pair, Proud Boys, or neo-Nazis co-opted the Stars and Stripes. That is a very good point. Let's try to get a phone call or two in before the end here. Jeremy, you're next.
Hi. I want to quote an old New York Post writer sometime in the 80s, I think. He said, Spectator sports exists so that men can prove to themselves that they have feelings. And
I think he was spot on.
All the women I talk to who don't like sports agree with me. The women who do like sports, which are a tiny minority, the people I know, are differently confused than the men who dismiss me when I try to talk about that. My interest in watching stuff that I don't play. I still play a little tennis. I watch a little tennis. I still play a lot of basketball. I watch a little basketball. I never really liked the other ones. I couldn't play them. And if you ever want to get, American football is overwhelmingly the most popular sport in the country. It has certain advantages in that they have a real salary cap, so the teams are fair and you don't have dynasties. But the kind of male behavior that it inspires and reproduces is pretty grotesque. And if you don't want to do that, go into a poker club on a Sunday and watch how people act.
Yeah.
I suppose the really psychotic ones take the day off from playing cards and don't try to multitask. But anyway, you know, the more I understand that I have feelings and I don't need to prove it, the less interest I have in watching. It seems to be about nationalism. I mean, there's a real history there. The NFL started as industrial teams, you know. You had you owned a factory and you hired the beefy guys.
Oh, we seem to have lost him, Jeremy. Anyway, yes.
He brings up a really good point that I want to talk about.
Okay.
One of the aspects of the radical inclusion that's so important to us and a safe place for everybody is, like, there's also no place for the toxic masculinity. You know, if you come to a Timbers game, you're going to see a lot of women. You're going to see a lot of kids. You know, if you go to a Thorns game, you know, like, it's even more so.
Yep,
you know,
exactly.
This isn't about that. You know, we break that out. We pull that away from that. And because you know, each individual, again, has, you know, we want them to be able to come and be a part of this and, you know, give themselves to the team and to the city and, you know, be all that, you know, share in that joy. Hopefully. I mean, it's not always joyous, but, you know, like, we're there in the worst times. We're there in the best times, and we share that as a community. And, you know, there are a lot of women. You know, you look at even the 107th board, we are almost exactly a 50-50 split between men and women. You see that throughout, you know, so much of our organization, and especially, like, the Doers and stuff, or, like, there's a big chunk that are women who are deep, deep into this and love this just as much as anybody else.
And what's happening with the support of the Thorns in this city is beautiful and unlike anything I've ever seen before. And it's something I think we should be proud of.
Yes.
But
I want to get a couple of people in before we're over. We're almost at the end of our show. Let's go to Edie. Edie, you're on the air.
Hi, I apologize if you've already answered this and I couldn't hear it when I was trying to call in. What is the best way, with my limited money, time, energy, that I can best support the Timbers Army, educating the people about anti-fascism, Antifa, and resisting this horrible ban? Do you want me to give money to directly for the education process? I mean, I was already going to write letters to the editor and to the front office as soon as I got back into town. What can we best do to support this education, this work, this unity? Do you want to have a big protest outside for? Just let us know.
Thank you for the call. I'll leave that one to you, Stephen.
Yeah, you know, really, it's about education. You know, the best thing you can do is have those conversations, just as the way we did in the 90s, as we came together as a broader community to say no to hate. You know, the time is now again. You know, break down the barriers, break down the misconceptions, break down the narrative that's being put out by white supremacists and white nationalists. And, you know, don't make it an us versus them. Make it an us. Make it everybody. you know, like radical inclusion. And, you know, being anti-fascist is not like some spooky thing. You know, it's really
things
that most people can get behind.
We should all be anti-fascist.
Like we all are, you know.
Yes.
There's like really a few that aren't, you know. And so, yeah. You know, just have those conversations in your community.
Hey, I want to thank you for being with us. I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're out of time. I want to thank you for being with us. And I would love to hear some response from fans, maybe off air, maybe online. This is not our usual kind of programming, but I think it's very important. And I really want to thank my partner for making sure it happened.
Sure. Thank you, Stefan, for joining us. Thank you for all that the Independent Supporters Trust is doing for the community. And go Timbers, go Thorns. We'll be back at you next week.
Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
You bet. Homeless from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, we hear from Caroline Frederickson, the president of the American Constitution Society and the author of The Democracy Fix, How to Win the Fight for Fair Rules, Fair Courts, and Fair Elections. At 10, it's Flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein will be joined by Norman Solomon, who's been fighting with the corporate Democrats for them to tell the truth about who Joe Biden really is. At 11 on stage in Studio D, May features the music of Portland musician Parfait Basal, Bhutanese poet Dilip Sunar, and the singers of the Tongan Sewing Circle. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galvan interviews installation artist Laura Fritz about her show Apex at the Portland Art Museum. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming, then please download our app today.
Hello, KBOO members. Thank you for being a part of our amazing community. Please join us this year at Mic to the People, our annual election meeting. Do you want to help steer KBOO in a positive direction this fall? Plan on attending the